Hey friends, this episode brought to you by the inaugural Asia Pacific Podcast Conference coming soon to New Zealand. If you're interested in starting a podcast, you're an existing podcaster, or involved in radio or media, then this event is perfect for you. I'll be there along with other local and international speakers, so visit www.asiapacificpodcastconference.com to register. Hey friends, no mucking around this week. I want to get you straight into listening to my guest this week. His name is Andre King and he's a comedian, but he's a bit more than just a comedian. I didn't know when I started talking to him that he could read whole novels from the age of five. See, I thought we were going to come and talk jokes, but we came in, we talked philosophy, we talked life. It was a pretty cool chat and I hope you enjoy it. A couple thank yous before we start the show. Crawford, thank you, man. I always have to thank you because you give up your time to come and podcast with me, and it's really cool. Paul Spain and the crew from Podcasts New Zealand, thank you, team. Awesome podcasts happening right now over at Podcasts New Zealand. If you Google that, podcasts on technology, podcasts on entertainment, just about a podcast on everything, including life, with this little podcast here, My Kiwi Life. Hey, just a quick shout out to the Guy and Harley podcast. We've had a bit of beef going back and forward over the last few weeks. Maybe you're up to date with that. In their latest podcast, I've got this little clip of them taking a bit of a crack at the My Kiwi Life theme tune. Check it out.
My Kiwi Life.
Not bad. It got me thinking if we're ever going to do some type of competition, maybe people could do that. They could record themselves on their phones doing the My Kiwi Life. The story behind that song is that, yes, it's me who's singing it. And the whole reason I wrote it and recorded it is because I didn't want to pay for a song. So there you go, a bit of backstory and hopefully not revealing how cheap I am, but you know, we do what we can, right? That's the whole plan in life, is life hacks here and there. All right, team, here we go. Andre King with this week's episode. Thank you all for subscribing. Thank you all for sharing. If you do know a friend who's looking maybe for a podcast like this, send them the link and get some more My Kiwi Lifers behind us. We're building a cool community and it's awesome to be part of your day, part of your life. So thank you, team. Big hugs to everyone.
My Kiwi Life, let's play the game of life today. My Kiwi Life, the ups and downs we live each day. This is my Kiwi Life. Oh, this is my Kiwi Life.
I wonder if you take it for granted that you can take the heavy subjects and turn them around and make them palatable for the everyday joker. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wrote a big note down here and me and Crawford talked about it. Oh, Crawford's joining us. Hello, Craw. You there?
Hello.
Cool, man. It was philosophy and comedy, because I thought about it and I was like, man, those two things go quite close. When something heavy goes down, you guys take that, turn it around, and I think the general public, eat it back up. But I don't know, like, laughter somehow makes it easier to deal with. And then that goes deeper for me, like, why is it like that? Why can't we just talk about stuff? Why do we have to laugh about it? You know, like that black humor.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of you know, black humor that sort of comes into play, particularly when dealing with horrific events. I mean, a lot of the time, these great tragedies are typically too much for us to deal with.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like trying to count to infinity. Your mind just can't deal with that.
Yeah.
So it's space is expanding, and the rate at which it's expanding, trying to find the end of it, you'd never actually reach it, even if you were traveling at 10 times the speed of light. It's like, whoa, that's kind of mind-boggling. I mean, I don't even know how to think about that. So when you hear about, that guy over in, was it Denmark or Norway? and he went on a rampage and started sort of shooting up kids on a Christian youth camp slash political rally thing, and he killed like 90 people in one swipe. We're all sitting here just completely dumbfounded.
Yeah.
And I've always looked at comedians and performing comedy as being kind of like the historians of the modern age, yeah. if you like, where what we say is being recorded for future generations to listen to yeah. and to try and get a handle on what it was like to live back in those times. I mean, if you look at the Black Rights Movement, the Civil Rights Movement in the 60s in America, there's lots of history, lots of newspaper cuttings and documentation sort of regarding what was happening then.
Yeah.
But if you go back and you look at, say, Lenny Henry, who was performing stand-up at that time, and then you try, then you can almost get like a completely different perspective on what it was like to actually live it and breathe it yes. at that place and time. And that's one of the things that I find most endearing about performing stand-up is the ability to actually be sort of in the moment to comment on society. But, of course, it's a double-edged sword because the flip side of that is that you're a comedian and the tendency is in your own time people don't take you seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a double-edged sword. And like you'll say, some of the stuff we need to hear. I don't know. It's those things about life that freak me out. You know, I'm like, why is it like that? It should be that all the comedians in New Zealand are in Parliament, you know, and I feel like you'd have a decent shot.
Yeah, but nothing would get done.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know, you know, like you guys, the comedians are always the first to get back to me an email. The comedians are always the first to like call if something's going down, you know, I can't make it. I'll give you a bell. If, sorry, man, you know, we've had that, me and you. And I don't really see any other area, you know, I've talked with actors, I've talked with a politician, but no one has gone out of their way like comedians, some specific ones like Guy Williams, like Paul Ego.
Mm-hmm.
People I was intimidated by talking with, including yourself. You know, I've YouTube stalked you for like a couple of weeks now. So I'm right up there in your stuff, all right? And what I found is that I make this picture in my head of what you'll be because you're commanding that room. And I'm just blown away when I get to meet you guys and see that far out, they're just like me.
Yeah, so, we're just people too, bro.
Yeah, but I don't know why we forget that, you know. It's like an actor, a celebrity. We forget they're just people.
Hmm.
But it seems to be that the comedians, and maybe in the last 5 years I've taken more of an interest in looking into the American ones, you know. Like I didn't grow up, my dad is a funny dude, but I didn't grow up with him showing me like Eddie Murphy or, you know, Cosby. Are we still allowed to say that name?
You can still say Cosby.
No, that's like,
he puts the bills in the people.
It's like, you know, even that, he just went ahead and ruined life for everyone. You know, that was the dude. And now some stuff comes out and you're like, oh my gosh.
I think we broke Crawford.
Yeah, Crawford's broken. Well, I should go into talking about, you know, who you are. Andre King, we just got into it. I love that. I love that. But what's your way into comedy, man? Like, are you a young kid who wants to be a comedian? I wrote down here another note. I wouldn't consider myself a really funny guy, but I've certainly used humor to mask situations. Like, I wasn't a very talented reader or writer, but I could make my peers giggle.
Right.
And for me, that was helping me with what I think might have been a form of dyslexia or something like that. So that helped me again as I got older with talking to people and taking the, you know, pissing in their pockets, if you like,
mm-hmm.
in a humorous way, in an entertaining way. That way they wouldn't examine me and ask, hey, man, what'd you get school C maths? You know, and I wouldn't have to say,
16%. But it's...
That's only slightly less than me, man.
But you know what I mean? It's like, what's the... What's five-year-old Andre like?
Five-year-old Andre had a reading age of 24.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like tested, Einstein styles.
Tested in the top 1% of the country.
Really?
For English and math.
That's awesome.
So
what books were you rolling around with?
I think age five, my favorite author was Alfred Hitchcock.
Wow.
And in particular, the Three Detectives novels. So I'd read, I think before I was five, I'd read every Biggles book I could get my hands on, and then moved into the Three Detectives by Alfred Hitchcock, and then moved into R.A. Salvatore and sort of the Forgotten Realms trilogies, and then sort of... I don't know. I'm a voracious reader. I've just finished reading the entire back catalogue of Lee Child's Jack Reacher books. Yeah.
Wow. What, you know, are you aware at that time? Is that just normal for you? Just to read when you're young? Like, you're not thinking anything of it? Are you aware that others around you?
I grew up in a really small country town, and there was two channels, I think, on TV, but of course, being the kid in the household, we didn't get to decide what we got to watch.
Yeah.
So, I just buried myself in books.
And where did the humor come from? Because I can imagine the words, you know, you should be like working for NASA or something.
No.
Doogie Howser styles. Craw, do you know Doogie Howser?
Yeah. Oh
well, he's, you know, Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, that's what he started off as.
It's a good show. Should bring that back.
It was a good show.
Well,
it was a great show.
What were your TV shows growing up, Craw? Like,
well, the show that I grew up on, kind of weirdly, is Malcolm in the Middle,
right?
Which is about a really intelligent kid. So it kind of sounds similar to
Andre. Is it based on
Andre,
you?
Andre, what you're going through?
No.
Were you aware of your intelligence as a child?
No. I've always been fascinated by language, I taught myself how to speak German by reading Commando comics.
You could speak German?
Yeah, ein bisschen.
Ah, good.
Yeah, sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Mein Frau kommt aus Deutschland.
Ah, sie geht's.
Crawford, we just backstabbed you in German.
I guess I've always been fascinated by language. I was kind of raised bilingually, I think that kind of set the tone for where I needed to be. Mm. And my mother was very proactive on my reading, and dad was away a lot in the army and doing his thing. So I guess the comedy aspect of it didn't come in until I was seven. And my parents bought me a compendium of jokes, and it was as thick as a telephone book, right? An Auckland telephone book too. and inside this thing were, 10,000 jokes. And I read the thing until the covers came off.
Love it.
Trying to figure out why that joke had made it into that book. What was it that made it funny? And because I'd read it so often, I ended up sort of inadvertently memorizing the entire book.
Really?
To the point where people could turn to a page and go, what's the fourth joke down on page 412? That's a rhyme, and it's...
Are you going there right now?
In a restaurant, they met Romeo and Juliet. They had no cash to pay the debt, so Romeo owed what Juliet... And that was in there.
Wow.
And yeah, so
there's some photographic stuff going on too.
Do you have a photographic memory?
A pornographic memory. I can remember pretty much every piece of porn I've ever seen.
I don't know if that's good or not, but it's a talent.
Yeah, it's a skill. I'll claim it.
A CV worthy.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, so I had that. So I was always, I guess I always had that kind of tucked away as a string on the bow. And I was a bit rough as a kid as well, quite a few fights and stuff. And one day just got into a fight with this kid and hurt him quite badly.
Really?
Yeah, like bad enough that I kind of sat there and thought to myself, if I carry on this way, I'm going to kill someone. So I stopped. I decided I wasn't going to do that anymore.
And how old were you?
I think it was about 9 or 10.
These are like big questions for a, like 7. You were memorizing, you know, whole books. 5, you were cranking novels. By 10, you had worked out that, you know, pretty much the meaning of life. Don't be meanie to people. I'm thinking when I was 5, I'm pretty sure I still slept in my mum and dad's bed.
It's like going back to that. Comedians as philosophers, that's what it sounds like with you going through the book and actually, why did this end up in here? That's a very like philosophical question to be asking at what?
This is perfect. This 10, works right into my 10. Theory.
I was always a very curious and gregarious child.
And yeah, at 10, most children don't sit there and think, what are my actions? How do they affect people in the way that it seems like you were doing?
Oh, the kid nearly died, you know. Basically, we were in the top tower of this like treehouse thing, and we were arguing over who was going to get to slide down the fireman's pole first, and we had a fight and he fell out and hurt himself really badly, and that was the turning point for me where I kind of went, all right, well, I'm going to keep my anger in check from now on, and I'm not going to resort to these.
Wow.
So
and that's a lifelong thing that stuck with you?
Yes, I have sort of figured out over the years, though, that just because I've decided not to be violent doesn't stop people being violent towards me.
Yeah.
So I got into martial arts.
Awesome.
At age 12, I think I started doing Taekwondo, and then moved from that into Muay Thai. Became an instructor in that, and sort of a few classes in Kali and Filipino stick fighting and knife fighting and bits of Aikido and Jiu-Jitsu. I've kind of used that as a method of training rather and defense rather than.
Andre, none of these things are on your bio when I look on the comedy stuff online. So this is awesome that this comes out.
Nobody wants to read this in the bio. I mean,
worked on knives and, you know, that's cool. But anyway, good. They can come here to hear all that awesome stuff. No, I'm interested in the fighting thing because for me, I grew up with older brothers and sisters. Now, I was as big as them, but I was younger by half, you know?
Yeah.
So I always had people around me to kind of, is it baby you a little bit? You know, they did all the fighting for me. They made sure I was very much a mummy and daddy's boy. I think I'm about the same as from 15 till now, I'm exactly the same. Like I have conversations with Crawford. He's like, did you like rebel? I was like, nah, I'm exactly the same. So what I'm worried now is that I don't have a moment like that, which taught me something. So
sure you do.
What? What I mean though, is that I'm fearful that I will, because I haven't had to fight for something, because nothing's been taken away from me, because I didn't have a near miss, I'm happy just to cruise along. And there's a sense in me that you should look for more in life than just cruising along, which is probably why we're doing the podcast.
But you've been to university, right?
I have, yeah.
Okay, why'd you go to university?
Why did I go to uni? That's a good question. I think I felt like it was something that I should do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know I wanted to be in television or filmmaking at that point. I actually went to be a teacher and walked in on my first day and everyone said, good morning, Mr. Fleming. And I was like, nah, I don't want it. That's not cool at all. You know, not cool as in I wanted to be cool, but that's too scary to be in charge of children when I felt like I was about on the same level as them.
What do you mean you walked in? You actually went into a classroom?
Yeah, they take you into a classroom. And
so you were like a TA?
Yeah.
Huh.
Like, but early, you know. This was the Waikato region, so that's maybe how they roll down there. Chuck you in the deep end, which is how they roll down there. But
well, you could argue that schools are so underfunded.
That's true. You'll do. Get in there.
You, can you speak English? Oh, kind of. Good enough. Come on.
So, yeah, that's, I mean, I don't mean to project on you, bro, but that's kind of like a fear I have, is that it was too easy. So now I'm trying to catch up and, you know, I you know, you hear it from maybe some of the conversation in the States with comedians that the best ones have come from troubled backgrounds, you know, and they use that. Maybe I'm just making that up.
No, I think a lot of comics come from troubled backgrounds. But, you know, that's primarily because most comics weren't big enough to be able to defend themselves with their fists. So they became great deflectors of aggression by using humor.
Maybe that's what I am, a deflector.
Maybe.
Okay, well, that's all right. Sweet. Sorted.
Also, comedians, depression is a big thing with comedians as well.
Yeah.
Like, suffer from depression.
Really?
Mm.
Is it like a drug when you're up there?
Yes.
And is it addictive?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, can't wait for your next hit?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I heard Jimmy Fallon was talking about it, that he got really into it and he just couldn't wait till his next time.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's the same for most comics, I think. Yeah, the ability, there's only about 5% of the world's population that can get up on stage and entertain a crowd and keep them there and engaged for an hour. 5% of the world's population. That's a pretty select group of people.
You're in a good club.
Yeah, it's a great club to be in. And the, you know, when you get up on stage and you hit that first joke and you get that first laugh, all of the nerves just melt away and there's just you engaging with a room full of strangers, making them laugh. And when people are laughing, there's no anger, there's no aggression, there's no hate, there's no sort of thoughts about what you've got to do at work tomorrow or the asshole that you work with or how much filing you've got or how behind you are in your mortgage or, oh, my God, I've just been evicted. There's none of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just pure and raw emotion. And comedians, we learn to feed off that and we love it. We absolutely love it. And it's just as addictive as cocaine.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's amazing to, you know, when you say it like that and you express it in a way that it's just people in a room forgetting and laughing. I don't know why, like, why is it that life, why aren't we just doing that every day? Like, maybe we should just be laughing. You know, I wrote down here as well, why do we laugh? You know, I don't know what the meaning of laughing is. Is there one? Like, I understand crying, you know, that's probably a good sign you've hurt yourself. You need a bit of help.
Well, what if it's emotional crying, though?
Well, maybe that's just a...
What if it's crying because you've got something in your eyes?
Yeah.
What if it's crying because you've got faulty tear ducts?
That's true.
Yeah, there's a whole range of things. Yeah. That, you know, you can cry from laughter.
That's true.
So, yeah, it's for my money, what I enjoy is being able to take a crowd of people out of their own lives for 20 minutes to an hour. And for that period of time, they're seeing the world as I see it.
Mm.
And because they're seeing it the way that I see it, it creates this connection between the comedian and the audience. And what it also does is while that sort of connection feeds me as a comic, it also gives them a break from everything else in their lives.
Yeah.
Because they're not thinking about anything else other than what I'm saying to them.
Yeah.
And retelling the stories that have come sort of, you know, fizzing out of my dome. So I think that's really all it is laughter at seeing something and looking at it from a perspective that you wouldn't normally look at it from, because you're not looking at it from your perspective, you're looking at it from the comics. And the comic typically would have a pretty skewed perspective on things. Yeah, it's and whether that topic is you know, how much I used to get beaten up as a kid, to you know, the last time I used single ply toilet paper. Yeah. It's it doesn't matter. It's like I said, you can make the rigmarole of putting a duvet inside a duvet cover a funny bit, you know, and people can relate to it because we've all had trouble putting on a duvet cover. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, one of the things that I find most frustrating is going shopping. Right, I don't mind going shopping, but generally, like most blokes, I have a list in my head of the things that I need to buy. I know roughly where in the store they are. I grab my trolley and I go there, and I'm in, and I pick up that one, 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 into the trolley, and I'm off to the checkout. And then invariably, I get stuck at the checkout behind some old person faffing about with bloody coupons and change, and standing there going, "Oh, now I think there was something else that I actually needed. Now, what was it? It's I can't. Now, oh, that's right. The grandkids wanted me to get some Werther's toffees. Oh, was it Werther's toffees or was it Sparkles? I'm not sure." And I'm standing there just going, "For God's sakes, just make a decision. Make a decision. Oh, gee, just die so I can finish my shopping."
Yeah,
you know, it's yeah. But we can all relate to being stuck behind somebody who's just indecisive.
Yeah.
Whereas I pride myself on being very decisive.
Yeah.
So, you know, and as a result, I have zero regrets about anything.
Wow.
I've made ups, but I don't regret those ups because I, at the very least, made a decision and stuck with that decision.
Yeah.
And whatever the outcome, I choose to live with that outcome. Good, bad, or otherwise. This is what I'm doing. This is what's happened. Oh, well, this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah. That's amazing that you can actually, again, all I can think is autopilot for me. Have I actually had a moment where I've sat down and said, those decisions you made, look at uni when you asked me about uni. I don't know. You know, so maybe that's what I need to do, start making some, or backing my decisions, you know what I mean?
Just you know, believe in, yeah. I have a sense of fate, of kismet, and therefore any decision that I make, regardless of the outcome, is the right decision, because it's the decision that I've made. And if I wasn't meant to make that decision, then whatever happens wouldn't have happened.
Whew, these are big topics, Craw. What do you reckon? You on board?
I like that thing about fate and putting yourself out there and letting, you know, whatever happens, happens. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, it's not so much letting whatever happens, happens, because you still have to do everything you can to create your own opportunities for success. But I think what it comes down to is just opening yourself up to being directed by the universe as to what happens. So, you know, make a decision. You know, the energy that's contained in the world around you will either guide you on your path or nudge you back onto it if you're not doing things the way that you're meant to. Mm. You know, do you guys get deja vu?
Yep.
I haven't had it in a long time, but...
See, I get deja vu all the time.
Really?
Yeah, like all the time. And I like to think of deja vu as the universe telling me that I'm on the right path.
Hmm.
Because if I'm seeing this event again, then that's fate, right? That must be what it is. It must be the universe saying, "Oh, look, you're on track. You're on the right track." Mm. And when I go for periods where I haven't had a bout of deja vu for a while, then I kind of take that as a cue that, well, obviously I need to change tack and do something else, and try something else. And whatever I decide to try, if I get a deja vu off the back end of that, then I know I've made the right decision. You're
like waiting for it sometimes. Like, come on, deja vu, kick in, do something.
All the time.
Like a gut feeling. I heard someone talking about their gut feeling, and they were up for an award, a writing award. And he said he had a gut feeling when he left the pre-party that he wasn't going to win. And I was like, I don't know if that's just fear creeping in, you know, or if that gut feeling is real. I'm torn on that one.
Well, I don't know. What if he had a gut feeling that he was going to win?
Well, what if he should have a gut feeling that he's going to win all the time, backing himself? Then maybe the universe can help him out and meet him halfway.
Well, the only gut feelings I get typically mean I have to go to a bathroom soon. So.
Andre, what about your first time on stage? I want to explore this idea of, I reckon what keeps me and a lot of people away from attempting to stand up in front of a room full of people is the fear of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scary as thought, getting up there, because the survival part of me is thinking, this is life or death. You know?
Well, you know, they have done studies. Right.
You're getting a bit of noise.
Are you getting feedback?
Yeah, just
are you hearing that?
There's a bit of noise. Do you want to have a bit of a tutu? It kind of crept in, didn't it?
Yeah.
That's the universe, man.
Wow. What's it telling us, though? All right. Well, we'll just say that that was the universe.
Let's just say that that was the universe. That's good awesome. Decision. Good decision, man.
That's awesome. Thank you, universe. I'm not sure what you're telling me, but... Yeah, maybe it's telling me I'm on the right track talking to you.
Maybe. There have been studies done where people actually have this, what do they rank the fear of public speaking higher than the fear of death.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, which I think is kind of bizarre. You know, people would rather be killed in public than speak in public, which might explain why when in front of a firing squad, people say any last requests and people don't say shit. Just shoot, man. I'm not talking in front of you guys. See, whereas as a comedian, I'd probably just tell them the first half of a joke. Now shoot, but you figure it out.
Where do some of those ideas you have on fate and the universe and things like that, do you have any sort of, I don't know, ideology that comes from any sort of particular place, or is that just what you think?
I was raised as an Anglican. I went to every boys' rally, and when I was 16, became a born again Christian. And then when I was 18, it took me 2 years to read through cover to cover the Bible. When I was 18, I decided, no, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So I kind of rebelled at that point against sort of Christianity in general. Not because of the faith, but because of the rituals involved. Just didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. Like, I mean, the whole and being curious and a reader, the whole changing of the bread into the body of Christ and the wine into the blood. That was actually a Babylonian practice and Babylonian ritual called transmogrification, I think it's called, or transmutation, one of those two. And there were various other bits and pieces, and it was at that point I started sort of researching other religions as well, and essentially I wasn't able to find anything that I could hand on heart 100% say, this feels right, this feels accurate, this feels like what we've actually, you know, been through. And the closest sort of historical sort of references that I could find to godlike creatures being here on Earth at any point in time involved having to go all the way back to ancient Sumeria and then researching the Anunnaki, which even that sort of stretches the bounds of imagination. So in the end, what I personally settled on was Zen Buddhism. I researched that, and that felt like quite a nice fit for me. So that's basically what I adhere to, which is be cool to other people and cross your fingers that they're cool to you. And if they're not cool to you, then leave them.
Yeah.
You know, they can stay over there. I'm going to go over here. And that's more or less what it comes down to.
I kind of like, you know, after hearing that you were powering through novels at 5, like,
yeah,
it's a very comforting for me to hear, like, that's some mega, that brain has had a long time processing.
Yeah.
And so, like a philosopher, we're just going to put that label on you now in this room. You're coming up with some answers for me, which is good. I agree with that. Because I've been struggling with that. I'm happy to believe something's out there. You know, I feel like a goldfish looking out at the human, thinking, why doesn't he need water? Why can he stand there?
He does need water.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I'm stuck in
this. That's some philosophy right there, man.
I'm stuck in this goldfish bowl and forgetting things in 7 seconds.
What I find confusing is, if water is the universal solvent, why do we drink it?
I don't know. What do you mean?
Well, water is the universal solvent. You can put anything in water and it will break it down eventually. It's just a matter of time and pressure. Water, universal solvent, that's what, you know, that's what water's called. And yet here we are, a couple of glasses of water, go without it for a few days and see how well you fare. I find that kind of odd.
Have you ever been without water for those amount of days? Have you been in a situation, either of you?
Yes.
Really? Like a survival situation?
Like, yes. Fasting or something?
No, it wasn't fasting. I was a soldier, and we'd missed our resupply. So, and there was plenty of water around us, but it was full of giardia.
Really?
No one was keen to drink it. We hadn't quite got to the point where we're sort of doing backward rolls and trying to pee into our own mouths. you know, a few people offered to pee into other people's mouths, but I don't know if I could drink someone else's pee.
Well,
I mean, I could only just imagine drinking my own if I absolutely had to. But to drink someone else's pee, that's, I don't know, you know, that just...
What about if we put it through a filter and it's what you're drinking now?
Oh, if it goes through a filter, I have no problem with that.
That's fine. But if it's straight pee-pee, wee-wee, mouth, not down.
No.
That's
no.
Fair enough. I feel like that's a normal response.
It can't be warm. It can't be warm.
Not enough.
I think the heat is the problem.
Not enough Dutch blood in me, I think. Is.
I was listening to the Joe Rogan Experience, and he said he drank his own pee, and he said... Really not that bad.
Really?
Hmm?
So episode 100, we'll try it on this podcast call.
Yeah. How many women kissed him after hearing that on the podcast, I wonder? There's no way that any woman could kiss Joe Rogan and not go, does his mouth taste like pee? Has he just done this?
Any thoughts on why getting up on stage is so hard for so many? If a young William or a young Andre is sitting out there, they're listening to this, they're like, man, comedy's what I want to do now, but I'm just too scared. You know what I mean? I don't want to use the word, like, scared in a bad way, a legit feeling.
Fearful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's some tips that you've taught yourself?
Get really drunk.
Okay.
That helped a lot with my first time. Yep, I think I was 8 double Jim Beam and Cokes in before I got up on stage.
Yeah.
And it was more or less like that for, I don't know, maybe 6 months. before I started to realize I'm actually spending more money on the bar than I'm actually making as a comic. It's costing me to be a comedian. So I had to sort of rein that in, and now I don't drink at all before a show.
And yeah, it's interesting.
What do you drink? It still drink?
Not really.
Hmm.
Not really. I still enjoy a drink, but it's something that I have to be kind of in the mood for. And I mean, you know, they've changed all the drink driving rules and stuff. I think what cured me was going to the UK and just trying to keep up with the drinkers over there. They have a completely different ethos when it comes to drinking in the UK, and it's too much for me.
So you did comedy here, and then you went to the UK, or yep. You? And how long had you had your career here for before you did your?
I started in 2000, went over in 2010, came back in 2013.
Right. Is there humor a lot different to ours, like when you play a Kiwi as opposed to...
They're a lot harsher.
Really?
Yeah. Kiwi audience is a lot more forgiving. You know, you get up on it in front of a Kiwi audience and you do a gag that falls flat. People will generally sit there and go, oh, at least you gave it a go, mate.
Yeah.
Hey, at least you gave it a go.
That one guy out there.
Yep. Whereas in the UK, I walked out on stage, and before I even got to the microphone, some dude called out, "Fat bastard!" Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Like, what about heckling? Do you have to, like, because I've heard stories of others saying, man, you got to get on top of those hecklers or they're unstoppable.
There's a line.
Really?
There's a line. Okay. As a comic, you can only respond back to the heckler at a similar level to which they have heckled you with.
It's like rules.
Yeah. Totally, because if heckler's sitting there and he goes, "Oh, that joke was a bit shit, mate," and you go, "Really? You thought it was a bit shit? Well, I hope your children die in a house fire." Then the audience will be sitting there going, "Ooh, that was a bit harsh. That was a bit rough. Wish the children would die in a house fire just because he didn't like his joke." You know, there's all of a sudden the audience aren't on your side. They're on his side now, seeing the world through the heckler's eyes and imagining, you know, how they would feel if they were just told that. So, you know, if a guy says, "Oh, that jacket was a bit shit, mate," then you go, "Yeah, well, nice shirt. Mm. Does that sound men's clothes where you bought that?"
Nice.
And that's on a similar level to what they've just said.
And the audience wants to back you.
The audience wants to back you. You're the one with the microphone. You're the one with the light. You're the one standing up on stage. So they want you to nail the heckler. They just don't want you to do it in a mean way.
Yeah.
So you have to maintain that sort of charming sort of persona when you're on stage. Mm. And, you know, if it's one of those things where if you give the heckler enough rope, they'll hang themselves, because eventually it'll get to the point where the audience is sitting there going, "Dude, just shut up, man. I didn't pay $20 to come and listen to you spouting shit. I'm here to see that fella. Yeah. I'm here to listen to him spouting shit." So
that's awesome.
But if you get heckled in England, would you be more harsher because they have a more harsh sense of humour?
It just comes down to how harsh the heckle is.
Yeah. There's like...
You know, if they attack me personally, then that gives me license to attack them personally back.
Nice.
And typically, because I do this for a living, my attacks are more incisive than theirs are.
Yeah.
If they want to carry on, then that's fine. I can escalate further from there. At one point, I told a woman in Lanzarote that it must have been the vacuum in her head that prevented her from having a prolapsed vagina. And that was perfectly acceptable to the crowd because I'd asked her several times really nicely to be quiet.
Yeah.
And she argued with me the whole time. So, you know, by the time we got to that point, the audience were actually sitting around uncomfortable with her being there.
It's like all these rules in life that come out from, you know, first of all, we covered that it's nice that you can make people forget.
Yeah.
Then what we covered is that there's like these rules where if they're mean, you're allowed to be as mean back. If they get meaner, you're meaner back. But as long as you stick in these rules, in this room with a bunch of strangers, it starts to make sense for me that that's what it's all about, you know? And I came into this discussion like, why do we laugh? What's comedy? And I think what I'm realizing is that, and this is going to sound pretty out there and weird, but I've been thinking about birds, you know, like when they fly, one turns left and they all go left. There's mm-hmm. like this unwritten rule. And I wonder if that's what laughter is. We'll all go the same way. But no one's saying, like, you're that front bird, you know? Come on, ready? And we'll go. I just did a little wiggle in my chair, probably sounding like I'm high on something. But do you know what I'm trying to say? There's this unwritten language that we're all following, and it's good. It makes sense to me now. I don't know if it makes sense to anyone listening.
The thing is, though, that have you read any Richard Bach?
Have you read any books, Will? No.
Jonathan Livingston Seagull? See, that was all about a bird that didn't fly with the flock and went his own way and ended up evolving and progressing much further and faster than every other seagull he knew as he was growing up. And I think that's kind of what it's like for us as well, in that regardless of what it is that we're doing or how it is that we're doing it, if we can find our own way, then we grow as people. And as long as we're open to the opportunities that the universe provides us and we're doing our utmost to sort of be kind and be charming and do everything we can in life to live life the best way that we know how, then I think it's quite probably the best that we could possibly hope for, and it leads to our own personal growth.
I want to wrap it up, but the problem is that we're just scratching the surface of so much. So I wonder if one time you can come back.
Sure.
I like this idea that comedians and philosophers, makes sense to me.
Well, I think Andre's proved that theory correct.
Yeah, yeah.
He's dropped some knowledge.
Andre, what is the meaning of life? So when I say that, what's the meaning of life to you, Andre King?
The meaning of life, as I understand it, is pleasure. That's basically it. If you find what makes you happy and do that, then you will have a good life because you don't have any reason to be anything other than happy about it. I bounced around from job to job and then finally settled on being a comic. I've been that now for the longest period of my life. Some days I wake up in a weird country in a posh hotel room thinking to myself, man, I grew up on a farm in central North Island in a village of 400 people. How did I get here? But I love it. I love the travel. I love performing. I kind of guess that every decision that I've made along the way has led me to that point, just the same way that we're meeting now. This couldn't have happened any other way unless every decision that you'd made and gone with, and every decision that I made and gone with, and that you made, cool, and we're all now in this room together in this moment, this point in time, talking about these subjects.
It's very difficult for my little brain to hang on, but yep, I'm following.
Well, you think about it. If you hadn't gone to university, I'm assuming that's where you met. Where did you meet Scotty Kelso?
Uni.
See, now, if you hadn't met Scott, if you hadn't made the decision to go to uni, you wouldn't have met Scott Kelso then. And if you hadn't met Scott Kelso, then you guys wouldn't have talked about me. You wouldn't know me from a bar of soap. You might have called some other comic or emailed some other comic and have them sitting here.
So it happened for a reason.
Well, I think everything happens for a reason. We're just not exactly meant to know what those reasons are until we look back at them in hindsight.
You should have your own podcast, talking philosophy, talking awesome stuff, because people would need to hear that. Andre, what's the best way for someone now who's hearing you talk and wants to follow you, be in touch, watch your shows,
mm-hmm.
best way to kind of keep in touch with your adventures?
Facebook, Twitter, at Andre King Comedy, or Andre King Comedy, I think, is also the username for YouTube. And failing that, just send us a message. Come along to one of the shows. Keep an eye out for posters and stuff around town.
Love it. They need to come because it's you, that's your living, right? They need to come. They need to pay. You get paid, and you can make more funny stuff. You can be that bird that swoops through the sky.
I'm trying to be Jonathan Livingston.
You want to be the other bird that's
I want to be the bird just trying to find his own path and be content and happy with the path that he's on. Sorry, I went a bit Jerry Seinfeld. What is the deal with finding your own path?
Well, that's us, friends. Another week has come to an end, but not really. It's just a start, isn't it? Every day we get to have another go, and that's the cool thing. Thank you, Andre, for joining us. Man, what a guest. He's got some knowledge and some wisdom, and it just goes to show. I mean, you know, we always say don't judge the book by the cover, but that's a true example right there what Andre is, because when you say comedian, how many of us would just, you know, kind of really not take them serious, but when you hear them articulate and when they're looking at the world, it's just so cool that they can break it all down for us. So Andre, thank you, man. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and I really appreciate you listening on your phone, listening on the computer, wherever you may be in the world. Just know that I'll be cranking these podcasts every week to try and, you know, get this community going in terms of us, and that we can speak honestly, and that we can just, I don't know, man, you know, I guess I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I am saying I'm honest with you guys. And that's the thing. If we can just be honest with each other, maybe that's a good start. Who knows? Okay, team, mykiwilife.com is where you can find all the other podcasts. Please share, please subscribe, please review, please do all that stuff because it matters. So we'll see you next week, folks, right here on the My Kiwi Life podcast with me, Will Fleming.
Whoa, this is my Kiwi Life.
Hey friends, this episode brought to you by the inaugural Asia Pacific Podcast Conference coming soon to New Zealand. If you're interested in starting a podcast, you're an existing podcaster, or involved in radio or media, then this event is perfect for you. I'll be there along with other local and international speakers, so visit www.asiapacificpodcastconference.com to register.